This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
The passion here is that growing up and understanding, you know, the things that you really want and you really understand and you really love it. And I love what I do. And that's my advice to a lot of people is that, you know, you got to love what you do. You got to love it.
Welcome to the Color Money Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, co-host Fomi Keaty. I'm here with Emmerich Peace. And we are really excited today to have with us Harvey Yancey of H2 Design Build, amazing entrepreneur, business leader, and community advocate who's built an amazing business in Washington, D.C., dedicated to making high-quality homeownership affordable and accessible to our communities. As we continue our journey on the discussion of investing in real estate, on building wealth, and on leadership, we're excited to have Harvey with us today, and we're going to get, it's going to be quite a conversation, so looking forward to it. I'll start it off. You know, Emmerich, anything you want to say as you kick this off?
Well, first off, I'm just happy to meet Harvey, because every time I see somebody that looks like me in a space where you guys operate, I just get super excited. And then if you vouch for him, he must be something special. So I'm just excited for the conversation and contribute. So welcome to our world, Harvey.
And I'm real excited for it too, because, you know, we, you know, Emmerich and I live, and Julia and Daniel, we live in a very real estate brokerage centric world. And so Harvey's part of us wanting to reach out and bring folks who are in real estate, but from the development and investment angle and other disciplines, and bring them into our space to have this conversation. So we're excited about that. So Harvey, thank you for joining us. You know, you're somebody who I have had the privilege of having the opportunity to work with, but someone who, you know, I really have had a chance to observe and to admire and see accomplish so much. So I'd love to start off with Harvey, if you just take us back, you know, like you've accomplished a ton, you've built a construction company, a development company, but like, where did it all start? You know, what was it like for you growing up, and how did you find your way to real estate?
First of all, I want to thank you guys for having me. You know, these types of conversations are very important, you know, for everyone to hear, you know, not including me, just all the people of color that are in this ecosystem, sharing knowledge and, you know, their roadmap to getting to where we've been, kind of neglected on for years. So appreciate you guys for having me and telling my story, because it's history. Actually, I started doing real estate early 2000s. I went to college, went to Howard, actually went to Norfolk State, transferred to Howard, grew up in Alexandria, Virginia, worked in the gym business in corporate America, kind of went up through the management there and decided that, you know, I wanted to be a kid again. So I opened up, you know, a bar restaurant in North Carolina. And then once I realized that that wasn't fun anymore, I moved back home permanently, had a house out in Prince George's County. And I was always coming to the city with one of my high school friends and college friends whose family had a flooring company. And during my time, as I was semi-retired, at a young age, I was just burnt out and tired of working. I walked into like three or four projects that was going on at LaJort Park, and going to Howard, understanding the LaJort Park history and watching it as it changed as I went into these homes that they were doing these incredible new renovations on. I was like, wow, DC is changing. And watching DC changed, I was like, I want to be a part of it somehow. And I ended up meeting a couple other like people in the construction industry and doing the smaller developers that were buying and renovating homes. And back then, the prices weren't what they are now. Brought my first house on 8th and I Street. Had my own cash, own credit card, and really no bank financing. I financed it out of my pocket. We started one house there. Was it 2004, 2005? And as we were building this one particular house, it was 12 feet wide. We ended up adding a big addition on it and doing these floating staircases because my design background comes from growing up in Alexandria, Virginia, O-Town, and Del Rey, going to my rich white friend's house and looking at these houses that they were living in and had these crazy interior design, but you couldn't tell from the outside. So we did one house, and then within that year, we ended up doing 11 more houses. I started buying houses around the neighborhood that people were trying to move out. Then as I start seeing the neighborhood change, I was like, wow, we're kind of onto something. And this is 8th Street before it was 8th Street. And fast forward, we ended up probably within 5 years doing like 30 or 40 renovations in that area. And we started kind of like the renaissance of the 8th Street corridor of renovating homes. And we're here now. So
fast forward that, Harvey, to today, and just give people a little flavor of what your business looks like today. So from... You know, a lot of times we get to hear some amazing stories like, how'd you get from here to here? And people don't always put together the time frame, right? So 2025, 2005, 2004, 2005, you start renovating some houses. And now today, what does the H2 enterprise look like today?
Currently, we have three different companies, H2 Communities, which is a partnership with the McKinney Group, on doing for sale townhouses, modern, affordable townhouses. And we have H2 Design Build, which does the construction arm of it. And then we have H2 Development, which does the development multifamily homes as well. So, and we currently have about 25, 30 people that work with the company, consultants as well as employees. And it grew from me and just like two, started out with me, my nephews and cousins, and my brother who runs the construction division. And, you know, we have full back office accounting and project managers and things like that.
Wow. So talk to people a little bit about, you know, you made a comment earlier that one of your early competitive advantages was your eye for design. Can you talk to us a little bit about how this combination of construction and design has played into that and how you've been able to bring that into your work?
I grew up in a one-bedroom den apartment in Alexandria, Virginia. And as I was saying, I would go to my friends' homes that, you know, had these renovated townhomes, these old 1800 homes that were renovated up to modern, you know, early 1995 homes. And my detail design came from going to Miami when I was 19 years old and loving the homes there and wanting to have big windows and straight lines, crisp lines. And that meant that, you know, your work was good. So that's where a lot of my eye for design came from.
So I have a question, and it comes back to, you said you lived in a one-bedroom den apartment, and you would go to your friend's home, and you got this eye for design. That's one thing. But then you went to Howard, and you saw the homes in Detroit Park, and you saw what was going on there, and you wanted to be involved in it. Because clearly you saw something special because you saw what was trending and what was happening. So it sounds like this whole video visionary. And in that visionary space, it's often difficult to get people to see what you see. And so you're building this empire. I'm gonna call it empire. You might not call it empire, it's an empire. And so you build this empire. How do you get people to come into your world and not be able to see what you see? Because most people can't see what you see when you're a visionary.
That's interesting, because another step that I took in 2008, I moved back to the city when I started doing a lot of work in the city. And I ended up, was fortunate enough to get a brownstone or Wardman house up off of 16th Street. And we renovated it. But my energy bills on my homes from my own personal house was crazy. You know, I was like $1,000 a month. And being in the business, I ended up deciding to like, hey, I'm going to upgrade my systems and do all these things. I did that, ended up buying a piece of land over in Rock Creek Park. And the next step was to build it and sell it. Well, I decided I want to do a green home for myself. I took a risk on myself. Just listen to me. I took a risk on myself, and no one believed that I could build this house and end up selling it for the money that I thought would get it. And my thought was it was the design and what I put into it. And it's like, you know, it was my passion of love of doing these things, you know, building these homes, doing the renovations. And that was my first single family home. Then I started buying lots over in 16th Street Heights and Shepherd Park. And everyone was like, oh, we don't see the numbers working for this. We don't understand this design. Now, fast forward from 2008, 2006, a lot of people were, I take it as a compliment. A lot of people were using some of the fast forward designs that I had back then, or at least taking risk on myself. No, I believe in, if I'm going to build it, I got to live in it. If I'm not going to live in it, then I'm not going to build it. So I build each home for myself, even though if they go on the market.
And talk about that, Harvey, because I think, you know, you started out taking risks and doing really interesting sort of high-end homes, right? And then you took that same idea of what does it mean to live in a great space, and you applied that to affordable townhomes. Now, can you talk a little bit about how, I mean, it's one of the things that I've always thought was so special about what you've done is you took the same eye and attention to detail you would apply to a $3 or $4 million house, and you said, how can I take this same sensibility about how you live? Can I connect those townhomes I saw my friends living in?
That goes back.
That apartment I lived in, to create a space that has dignity and grace and honors the people that are living in it.
That goes back to the one bedroom den with my mother and my sister. And have living in that space. And, you know, as you go to bed every night, you sit down on one knee and you pray. And one of the things that I prayed for was, you know, being healthy and having my own bedroom and fantasizing my own bedroom of being big windows because we had a small window. And that's the type of spirit I take into when we're developing a house or designing or with our designers.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the idea that you can have sort of luxury affordable? You know, people tend to think that design is this, you know, grandiose fashion thing that costs a ton of money. But can you talk to us a little bit about how design interacts with cost?
You just took the word drive money, because I'm like, that's oxymoron. That's an oxymoron. Luxury affordable. I don't get it.
I call it modern luxury affordable. I'll name a couple. Everyone has a different feel. My first home that I brought was a Ryan home, a Ryan townhouse. And it was cookie cutter. And I go to NVR, I go to EYA Homes, Tripoint. And actually I did a field trip with my team just to give them an idea of looking what's out there and looking at the things that we do, and how do we separate ourselves and brand ourselves a little bit different on the cost aspect of it. And it can just be the little things, you know, big windows. I would rather put a big window in a house and invest there than put small windows and put a bunch of crown molding throughout the place. I would rather spend a little bit more money on, the selective countertops than putting a bunch of recessed lights or, you know, things like that. You know, you can kind of balance it out where that cost is not that much on the project.
But that was just my thought right there, because you're in the business of building, so there's a margin that you have to make. Let's be real, this is a business conversation at this point, so there's a margin.
Well, one of the things that we are learning, you know, because this every day is a, you know, is evolving or learning and understanding, you know, your space. We're not, our margins are not going to be like a MVR or a Ryan Home or, you know, Toll Brothers, because they do production. Their cost is going to be less. We just have to find our way of that middle lane. As we grow, we understand the dynamics of what our brand is and better in that. And that's key for us. You know, we're going through a huge growth spurt right now, and figuring out and understanding what our market buyer is, and what we call it. I don't even call it affordable. I say it's the missing middle. And the missing middle is 80 to 120%. And that's either, you know, someone 2 or 3 years out of college that can't afford to live in this great city that we live in. You know, take advantage of some of the programs that they have, you know, to live in the city and have a nice place rather than, you know, a rundown place or, you know, something like that.
So you've really, Harvey, been able to carve out a niche, a space that was, you know, it's interesting to hear you tell the story. It was grounded in your experience and in your skill and in your capability, but you found a niche. And a lot of people that we talk to in real estate are saying, hey, I want to be a real estate investor. I want to be a developer. I want to do this stuff. But like, what would be your advice to somebody who said, hey, I want to get into the business of being a real estate developer? How would you advise them? And how did you find your special space in there?
Well, when we started, I worked in corporate America. Once I fell out of love with that, understanding that, you know, there is a ceiling there, and they're only going to allow you to reach, you know, that ceiling and go no further. Just the sports background, you know, I wanted to go higher, but when someone's holding you back, and when I opened up the dream of, you know, owning a bar restaurant, once I fell out of love with it, you know, I had no passion. The passion here is that growing up and understanding, you know, the things that you really want and you really understand and you really love it. And I love what I do. And that's my advice to a lot of people, is that, you know, you got to love what you do. You got to love it and get around, you know, a centric circle of people that, you know, can help you and educate you on some of the things that you may be missing. You know, I'm not the smartest person in the room, and I'm a sponge of learning different ways. You know, like I was saying earlier, we had a growth spurt and we're right in this missing middle, and I'm looking at different companies and I'm taking my team out so we can understand how they build, you know, how they design, the margins, what are their margins, asking them questions that a lot of people don't understand or don't know about the business.
You know, and I'm going to say something. Bo and I talked a little bit about you, and he told me that you and I kind of sort of have some similarities. And he said that you're a community kind of guy. You're a loyal kind of guy. And it sounds like you like consistency, because I like consistency. I like people around me that I can have some predictability. If I'm going in a dark alley, I know somebody's got my back. And so in that commitment to just your community and your quality, where does that come from? Where does it come from? And where do you expected to take you. Because sometimes when we're loyal like that, we can be loyal to a fault. And it don't even take us where we really want to go. But we're still going, and we have a tendency to try to make our best attempt to take people who maybe they just shouldn't even go there. And so
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
Well, the key word you said there was loyalty.
Right.
The community, I got it from my grandmother.
Okay.
Because she raised 9 kids. And, she was the pillar of our family and had a third grade education, opened up a restaurant and took care of multiple grandkids and great grandkids. And she was involved with the community. And my mother, she did the same thing. And she, the loyalty part is, being a team player. I grew up in sports and it takes a team and, to win, games. It doesn't take an individual. If I'm on your team or if I'm on the sideline, I got my pom-poms and I want you to win. And that's how I treat my centric circle as well. And that's the community is that, a lot of people, they don't understand. And if you're not willing to give them, a voice of knowledge that you can share, because it doesn't cost us anything to tell someone something that's right or wrong, or this is the right way to go. Or if you have subcontractors that are on projects that, they're failing in certain areas, a lot of times people don't let them know. They just let them fail.
Right.
So I actually have a great partnership now with Davis Construction. And one of the things that I'm implementing as their majority partner on some of their bigger projects is that, when we finish the project, we want to bring the CBEs or the small minority partners in on a project and give them a grade and let them know, the areas that we need to work with them on so they can continue to grow. If it's good or bad, some people don't want to hear it. But I would rather you tell me than not give me a job.
Right.
In reference to the community part of it, reaching out to the community, that's just in good spirit. I help kids go to football camps and not asking for anything back just because I was that kid that didn't have that opportunity. We do multiple turkey drives. I started doing delivering, food to seniors from the Girls and Boys Club, the Boys and Girls Club in Alexandria when I got my driver's license because my mother was sick and I had to go out and get us food. So when I had an opportunity, my thing was, let me go out and help others.
So how has that really, really helped you? Because it's good that it's just those are good things from an intrinsic perspective of what it does for you on the inside. How has that manifested itself in your business? How does that manifest itself in your business?
I don't look at it as a business opportunity. I look at it as doing the right thing. People know that if I say I'm gonna do something, I'm gonna do it. Sometimes I may take a little bit longer, but I'm gonna do it.
All right. That's all that sounds great, and all that humility sounds great, right? But what I'm saying, and I'm just going to tell you what I'm saying, when you do good for other people do good for you because they understand where your heart is. And the other part that I'm saying is that there probably have been some jobs or some deals that you have done that you probably shouldn't have been there. You don't even know why you're there. You know you do good work. You just don't know why those people are contacting you. Has that ever happened to you?
People contact me or contact us because they know that, if I say we're going to do something, we're going to do it.
Right.
I don't look at it like that. I just think it's just the right thing to do.
Right.
And on the reward side of it, something comes back great, but that is not my goal of, hey, if I do X, Y, Z, this is what I am to receive back. I have no expectations.
And that's why it comes back to you. That's why I come back, because you do it with no expectation. That's the beautiful part about it.
Have you seen the beautiful part about what you do? You see the way that Harvey has given back and just engaged in the community, right? That genuine level of care and concern and connection, is people can see that. People see through what's real and what's not, and that makes it different.
And the truth is, they can't avoid you. They can't avoid. They can't close their eyes.
You know, I can.
I get it.
If we can help each other out in some way with no strings attached, then it would be a little bit better. You know, it doesn't.
Thank you, Bo. I hear myself all over Harvey right now.
See, y'all the same type of people, man. I gotta tell you though, there is a thing that when you can go out in your heart to make a difference. That's fundamentally what business is. And I think we've come to think that business and impact are about doing something for ourselves, when fundamentally they're about doing something for others. And I think one of the things I admire about the two of you on this little call here is that in some very similar ways and in some very different ways, it's 100% clear that there's something core to your business that you are passionate about, that you would do whether people pay you or not, that you don't see as something you do for business. You see it as something you do because it's the right thing to do. And Emmerich gets up, Harvey, you know, Emmerich gets up and trains people in a cutthroat business where people can leave at any time. You help them come from nothing to something, and they just run out the door. And yet he gets up every day and does it again and again and again and again. And that's clearly what's in his heart, right? And I've seen Harvey. Harvey gets to the community. He sticks with people. He gives them a chance again and again and again. He gives back just because he thinks that's the right thing to do. He's not doing that because he thinks it's a business move or even wants to look good, or he's doing it because he thinks it's the right thing to do. At the end of the day, when you show up with that type of clarity of purpose, I think you have an opportunity to have a tremendous impact in the spaces that you work in. And I think you guys are living proof of that. And that's a pretty impressive thing. As we sort of turn the corner here and try and move to wrap this up, Harvey, I'd love for you to share a little bit with our listeners about your personal wealth journey. So you talked a little bit about being a kid, growing up. You talked about some different entrepreneurial endeavors. What are some of the things you've learned? You know, we talk to folks a lot about where in their life are they trading time and talent for money? Where are they trading time, talent, and money for money, which is a big part of what you're doing in your development business? And where are they just trading money for money? And how is your world and your personal wealth journey, like, what's your perspective on that right now? And you think about that in light of your girls and your family. Like, how do you think about personal wealth, and what's that journey been like for you? What are you learning? What have you learned? What are you still looking to learn? What are you grappling with?
What am I learning? What am I looking to learn? And what am I still looking to learn? Understand the value of your time. Understanding the value of your time and making sure that you're really, you know, counting your pennies and understanding where your pennies are turning into nickels and dimes, because they can always turn back into pennies. And that's monetarily, and that's also time spent, and educating others as well, you know, making sure that you're taking the time to educate other folks. If it's within your family, I think that's one of the things that I'm focusing on as I turn this page into my next chapter of, you know, being ready to go on to the next life of traveling around the world and not have to worry about anything, you know. You know, counting those pennies and making sure they turn into nickels and dimes, and watching them a little bit more carefully, because a lot of us didn't grow up with, you know, financial literacy and understanding, you know, two things: money and time.
So when it comes to that idea of education and then managing pennies to nickels to dimes in money and time. What has been the best lesson or resource or thing that you've learned in that, in the lessons of money? Like, is there anything that was really a breakthrough lesson that you learned?
Well, the time, make sure on the time part, make sure you're spending time where people are reciprocal and they understand the value of your time. And then on the money part of it is making sure that you're managing your money and you understand that there's an end and tomorrow is never promised. Tomorrow is never promised. You know, on this roller coaster, we know how to go out and hustle. And some people don't know how to go out and hustle. They just expect it. But tomorrow may never be, you know, interest rates may change and people may not know, understand how to maneuver through that. Banks may change and not want to be your best friend. People, you know, growing those relationships. So when it does change is that you make sure that you understand how to get yourself, you know, on, you know, back on track, you know, just understanding yourself better. And again, making sure that time, you know, as one of our friends tells us all the time, is that, man, how do I buy my time back? How do I buy my time back? Those are the things that I can, you know, say that I'm really focusing on right now.
How do you buy your time back right now?
I'm making sure that you have your systems and the people of like mind around you to help you get better, and that values your opinion on your vision. You know, that they can take your vision and run with it. They can be in a conversation, and that person that's used to being in a conversation with you, they know that this person is on your team. And as this person is finishing a conversation, it's like they're signing, they're here the same thing that they would hear from you. That's how you buy your time back. You have people around you that has that same vision, that's really pushing forward the way you would push forward. Maybe not saying it exactly the same way, but that end, someone else on the other end of it goes, ah, that was Bo, or that was Enric. That's, I hear that directly, you know, that would come from them. You know, building your team around you like that.
I have one last question. I'm gonna let Emmerich wrap us up and see if you have anything, final thoughts, Harvey. But my question for you is, I know that you've been a mentor and inspiration to a lot of people. I get the opportunity to meet some of Harvey's mentees and work with some of the companies he's helped navigate, and some young people that he's really taken an active role with. And my question for you is, I know you've done that for a lot of people, but who are the people that have inspired you? Who are the mentors, the peers, even just the one-off conversations that you've had throughout your life that have poured into you to help you become who you are today?
This guy, Bo McKitty, Bua Benite, David General, Todd Lee, my brother, who rides me, my mom, my sister, you know, my kids, you know, that, you know, give me the power to get up every day and run. So
what are some of the things that you got from those, that list of names of people that you just rattled off? What did you get from them in your journey?
I'll start with you. Just from where you started and your background and understanding the dynamics of your business and your passion. Bua, you know, he's a lion, and understanding, you know, the buying the time back. David is a tiger. You know, DJ is a tiger. And a lot of times he's the balance of like making sense from a level that, you know, as we're sitting there screaming at each other, sometimes he's screaming at you because he wants you to, you know, be better, or he's giving you the direction that, hey, I wouldn't do this, or I would do this and this is the route. And he had, you know, that sincerely he has your best interest. Todd Lee, just get, you know, just understanding the space that we're in right now as a company. He saw that in us, you know, 8 years ago. My kids, you know, I being my mentor, that they give me the energy to get up. My mom, the hard work. My sister, watching her raise a kid, two kids, her first kid when she was 14, and be on public assistance for 30 years. Just watching her raise her kids and get out. And now she owns her own home and she takes care of it. It's just being proud of her.
Well, thanks for sharing. I just know how I think it's just such a great example of how all of our life, you know, all of our autobiography is personal. And so much of our success is steeped in that which moves us personally and that which we've experienced. And I think I'm grateful, Harvey, for how you can so eloquently articulate that and be willing to put that out there, how our life experience drives who we are and how we have an opportunity to turn that life experience into something that can impact other people and use what sometimes we thought were the messed up parts of our lives. The fact that we lived in the one bedroom den when others lived in the townhouse or lived in the fancy mansion, and make that something that bridges our reality and that drives impact in this world.
We're all impactful in our own ways.
Yeah, I heard a lot, Harvey, and where this alignment comes is I've been listening to this whole, and I've heard other people, I've heard successes, I've heard loyalty, I've heard family love. To close us out, how does that correlate with your big why? And what's your big why for what you do and how you do it?
It's just being a better person. You know, it's 5 years ago, I started, in my mind, having a lot of death around me. Once you reach a certain age, you know, every other week, someone dies. I started thinking, you know, what do I want them to say on my tombstone? I lived well and I care deeper. So that's my why. My kids feeling the same way.
I lived well and I care deeper. I like that. I love it. Hey, Harvey, you know, thanks for being here. This is like super inspiring. And I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with us today on the Color of Money podcast. Would you be willing to come back?
Of course. Of course. You know, like I said, knowledge is power. You know, experience is even better, because, you know, if you hear from someone else, you know, people say they look up to folks like us that we really don't know, that, you know, we're kind of like, you know, mentors to a lot of different people. People need to hear it. And our failures may deter someone not to make the same mistakes. You know, our successes may put people on a path to be like, hey, they did it. You know, I look at my centric circle and I'm pointing out the things that they did. And I look at their failures and I look at their successes. I'm like, all right, this is the avenue I need to take. Ah, I saw this happen. And having these conversations helps other people. And that's the caring part.
Beautiful.
So there you have it. It's the Color of Money podcast. Harvey Yancey, Emmerich Peace, Bowman Keady. Hey, go out there. As Harvey said, live well, care deeper.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.